Order! Order! I have a short statement to make. I was very concerned at the incident in the Culture, Media and Sport Committee hearing yesterday. It is wholly unacceptable for a member of the public to treat and to be able to treat a witness in this way. It is all the more regrettable that such an incident should happen at a time when, particularly over the last few days, the work of this House and its committees has enhanced the reputation of Parliament. I have immediately set in hand an expert investigation into what took place, the reasons for the security failure, and order, the lessons to be learned. This investigation will be entirely independent of the House authorities. Statement, the Prime Minister.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With permission, I would like to make a statement. Over the past 2 weeks, a torrent of revelations and allegations has engulfed some of this country's most important institutions. It has shaken people's trust in the media and the legality of what they do, in the police and their ability to investigate media malpractice, and yes, in politics and in politicians' ability to get to grips with these issues. People desperately want us to put a stop to the illegal practices, to ensure the independence and effectiveness of the police, and to establish a more healthy relationship between politicians and media owners. Above all, they want us to act on behalf of the victims, people who have suffered dreadfully, including through murder and terrorism, and who have had to relive that agony all over again because of phone hacking. The public want us to work together to sort this problem out, because until we do so, it will not be possible to get back to the issues they care about even more. Getting our economy moving, creating jobs, helping with the cost of living, protecting us from terrorism, and restoring fairness to our welfare and immigration systems. So let me set out the action that we have taken. We now have a well-led police investigation which will examine criminal behaviour by the media and corruption in the police. We have set up a wide-ranging and independent judicial inquiry under Lord Justice Leveson to establish what went wrong, why, and what we need to do to ensure it never happens again. I'm the first Prime Minister to publish meetings with media editors, proprietors, senior executives, to bring complete transparency to the relationship between government ministers and the media, stretching right back to the general election. And the House of Commons, by speaking so clearly about its revulsion at the phone hacking allegations, helped to cause the end of the News Corp bid for the rest of B Sky B. Today, I would like to update the House on the action that we are taking. First, on the make-up and remit of the public inquiry. Second, on issues concerning the police service. And third, I will answer, I'm afraid, Mr. Speaker, at some length, all of the key questions that have been raised about my role and that of my staff. So first, the judicial inquiry and the panel of experts who will assist it. Those experts will be the civil liberties campaigner and director of Liberty, Shami Chakrabarty, the former chief constable of the West Midlands, Sir Paul Scott-Lee, the former chairman of Ofcom, Lord David Curry, the long-serving former political editor of Channel 4 News, Eleanor Goodman, the former political editor of the Daily Telegraph and former special correspondent of the Press Association, George Jones, and the former chairman of the Financial Times, Sir David Bell. These people have been chosen not only for their expertise in the media, broadcasting, regulation and policing, but for their complete independence from the interested party. Mr. Speaker, I also said last week that the inquiry will proceed in two parts, and I set out a draft terms of reference. We've consulted with Lord Justice Leveson, with the opposition, with chairs of relevant select committees, and the devolved administrations. I also talked to the family of Millie Dowler and the Hacked Off campaign. we have made some significant amendments to the remit of the inquiry. With allegations that the problem of the relationship between the press and the police goes wider than just the Met, we have agreed that other relevant forces will now be within the scope of the inquiry. Yeah. We have agreed that the inquiry should consider not just the relationship between the press, police and politicians, but their individual conduct too. And we've also made clear that the inquiry should look not just at the press, but other media organisations, including broadcasters and social media, if there is any evidence that they've been involved in criminal activities. I'm today placing in the Library of the House the final terms of reference. Lord Justice Leveson and the panel will get to work immediately. He will aim to make a report on the first part of the inquiry within 12 months. Mr. Speaker, there should be no doubt. This public inquiry is as robust as possible. It is fully independent, and Lord Justice Leveson will be able to summon witnesses under oath. Mr. Speaker, let me now turn to the extraordinary events we have seen over the past few days at Britain's largest police force, the Met. On Sunday, Sir Paul Stevenson resigned as Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police. I want to thank him for the work he's carried out in policing over many, many years in London and elsewhere. On Monday, Assistant Commissioner John Yates also resigned. And again, I want to express my gratitude for the work he has done, especially in improving our response to terrorism. Given the sudden departure of two such senior officers, the first concern must be to ensure the effective policing of our capital and confidence in that policing is maintained. I've asked the Home Secretary and Mayor of London to ensure that the responsibilities of the Met will continue seamlessly. The current Deputy Commissioner, Tim Godwin, who stood in for Paul Stevenson when he was ill and did a good job, will shortly do so again. The vital counter-terrorism job, carried out by John Yates, will be taken on by the highly experienced Cressida Dick. The responsibilities of the Deputy Commissioner, which the House will remember includes general oversight of the vital investigations both into hacking and into the police, Operations Wheating and Elverdon, will not be done by someone from inside the Met, but instead by Bernard Hogan Howe, who will join temporarily from Her Majesty's Inspectorate of Constabulary. We are also looking to speed up the process for selecting and appointing the next Commissioner. But, Mr. Speaker, we cannot hope that a change in personnel at the top of the Met is enough. The simple fact is that the whole affair raises huge issues about the ethics and practices of our police. Let me state plainly, the vast majority of our police officers are beyond reproach and serve the public with distinction. But police corruption must be rooted out. Operation Elverdon and Lord Justice Leveson's inquiry are charged with doing just that. But I believe we can and must do more. Put simply, there are two problems. First, a perception that when problems arise, it is still the police investigating the police. And second, a lack of transparency in terms of police contacts with the media. We are acting on both. These were precisely the two points that my right honourable friend, the Home Secretary, addressed in her statement to this House on Monday. We believe this crisis calls for us to stand back and take another broader look at the whole culture of policing in this country, including the way it is led. At the moment, the police system is too closed. There is only one point of entry into the force. There are too few, and arguably too similar, candidates for the top jobs. As everyone knows, Tom Windsor is looking into police careers, and I want to see radical proposals for how we can open up our police force and bring in fresh leadership. The government is introducing elected police and crime commissioners, ensuring there's an individual holding their local force to account for local people. And we need to see if we can extend that openness to the operational side too. Why should all police officers have to start at the same level? Why shouldn't someone with a different skill set be able to join the police force in a senior role? Why shouldn't someone who's been a proven success overseas be able to help us turn around a force here at home? I believe these are questions we should ask to get the greater transparency and the stronger corporate governance that we need in Britain's policing. Finally, let me turn to the specific questions that I've been asked in recent days. First, it has been suggested that my Chief of Staff was behaving wrongly when he didn't take up then Assistant Commissioner Yates' offer to be briefed on police investigations around phone hacking. I've said repeatedly about the police investigation that they should pursue the evidence wherever it leads and arrest exactly who they wish, and that is exactly what they have done. Number 10 has now published the full email exchange between my chief of staff and John Yates, and it shows my staff behaved entirely properly. Ed Llewellyn's reply to the police made clear that it would not be appropriate to give me or my staff any privileged briefing. The reply that he sent was cleared in advance by my permanent secretary, Jeremy Haywood. Just imagine, Mr. Speaker, if they had done the opposite. If they had asked for or acquiesced in receiving privileged information, even if there was no intention to use it, there would have been quite justified outrage. To risk any perception that Number 10 was seeking to influence a sensitive police investigation in any way would have been completely wrong. Mr. Yates and Sir Paul both backed this judgment in their evidence yesterday. Indeed, as John Yates said, and I quote, the offer was properly and understandably rejected. The Cabinet Secretary and the Chair of the Home Affairs Select Committee have both now backed that judgment too. Next, there is the question as to whether the ministerial code was broken in relation to the B Sky B merger and meetings with News International executives. The Cabinet Secretary has ruled very clearly that the code was not broken, not least because I had asked to be entirely excluded from the decision. Next, I would like to set the record straight on another question that arose yesterday, whether the Conservative Party had also employed Neil Wallis. The Conservative Party chairman has ensured that all the accounts have been gone through and has confirmed to me that neither Neil Wallis nor his company has ever been employed by or contracted by the Conservative Party, nor has the Conservative Party made payments to either of them. It has been drawn to our attention that he may have provided Andy Coulson with some informal advice on a voluntary basis before the election. To the best of my knowledge, I did not know anything about this until Sunday night. But as with revealing this information, we will be entirely transparent about this issue. Finally, Mr. Speaker, there is the question whether everyone, the media, the police, politicians, is taking responsibility in an appropriate manner. I want to address my own responsibilities very directly, and that brings me to my decision to employ Andy Coulson. I have said very clearly that if it turns out Andy Coulson knew about the hacking at the News of the World, he will not only have lied to me, but he would have lied to the police, to a select committee, to the Press Complaints Commission, and of course perjured himself in a court of law. More to the point, if that comes to the pass, he could also expect to face severe criminal charges. I have an old-fashioned view about innocent until proven guilty. But if it turns out I've been lied to, that would be a moment for a profound apology. And in that event, I can tell you I will not fall short. My responsibilities are for hiring him and for the work he did in Downing Street. On the work he did, I will repeat, perhaps not for the last time, that his work at Downing Street has not been the subject of any serious complaint. And of course he left months ago. On the decision to hire him, I believe I have answered every question about this. It was my decision. Hold on. It was my decision. I take responsibility. People will, of course...
Apologise for interrupting the Prime Minister. The House must come to order and hear... in silence, the remainder of the statement. The Prime Minister.
People will, of course, make judgments about it. Of course, I regret, and I am extremely sorry about the furore it has caused. With 20-20 hindsight and all that has followed, I would not have offered him the job, and I expect that he wouldn't have taken it. But you don't make decisions in hindsight. You make them in the present. You live and you learn, and believe you me, I have learnt. Now, I look forward to answering any and all questions about these issues, and following this statement, I will open the debate. But the greatest responsibility I have is to clear up this mess, so let me finish by saying this. There are accusations of criminal behaviour by parts of the press and potentially the police where the most rapid and decisive action is required. There are issues of excessive closeness to media groups and media owners where both Labour and Conservative have to make a fresh start. There is the history of missed warnings, select committee reports, information commissioner reports, missed by the last government, but yes, missed by the official opposition too. What the public expects is not petty political point scoring, but a what they deserve is concerted action to rise to the level of events and pledge to work together to sort this issue out once and for all. And it is in that spirit that I commend this statement to the House.
Yeah! Ed Miliband.
That was a big mistake. Should have done that.
Can I start by thanking the Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, for his statement? Recalling Parliament was the right thing to do because rebuilding trust in the press, police, and politics is essential for our society. The most powerful institutions in the land must show the responsibility we expect from everybody else. That is why the country wants answers from those involved in the crisis, so that those responsible can be held to account, and so we as a country can move forward to address all the issues that the Prime Minister mentioned in his statement. That is why I welcome Lord Leveson's inquiry and the announcement of the terms of reference, and indeed the panel members chosen by the Prime Minister for that purpose. It's why I welcome the Prime Minister's agreement with us about the Press Complaints Commission and its abolition, and that it needs to be replaced. It's why I welcome the apology from Rupert Murdoch and the withdrawal of the BSkyB bid. And it's why we respect the decision of Sir Paul Stevenson to stand down so that going forward, the leadership of the Met can focus on the vital work that is necessary. So we are beginning to see answers given and responsibility taken, and that is right. But the Prime Minister knows that he must do the same if the country is to move forward. The Prime Minister, I have a number of questions for the Prime Minister. The Prime Minister said in his statement,
I said a few moments ago that the remainder of the Prime Minister's statement should be heard in silence. Order! I say the same to members who are now heckling. Think of what the public thinks of our behaviour. Order! And stop it without delay. Mr. Ed Miliband.
Mr. Speaker, let me start with BSkyB. The Prime Minister said in his statement something that he said on a number of occasions, which is that he was excluded from the formal decision-making process. But with respect, that doesn't quite answer the questions he's been asked. Last Friday, he revealed that since taking office, he had met representatives of News International or News Corp, including Rebecca Brooks and James Murdoch, on 26 separate occasions. So the first question I have for the Prime Minister is whether he can assure the House that the BSkyB bid was not raised in any of those meetings or in phone calls with those organisations, and whether he can also say whether at any time he discussed the bid with the Culture Secretary or indeed any of his officials discussed the bid with the officials of the Culture Secretary. Let me now turn to Andy Coulson. 10 days ago, the Prime Minister said about his decision to employ Andy Coulson, I wasn't given any specific information that would lead me to change my mind. Mr. Speaker, the country has the right to expect that the Prime Minister would have made every effort to uncover the information about Mr. Coulson to protect himself and his office. Yet the pattern of events suggests the opposite, that the Prime Minister and those around him made every effort not to hear the facts about Mr. Coulson. In the last week, we have become aware of 5 opportunities for the Prime Minister or his staff to have acted on specific information that would surely have led him to change his mind about Mr. Coulson. All were declined. His Chief of Staff, Ed Llewellyn, was told in February 2010 that Mr. Coulson had hired a convicted criminal to work at the News of the World who was accused of making payments to police on behalf of the newspaper. Even Rebecca Brooks said yesterday this decision was extraordinary. Yet the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff apparently did nothing with the information. In May 2010, the Deputy Prime Minister warned the Prime Minister about bringing Mr Coulson into Downing Street. He did nothing. On September 1st, 2010, the New York Times published an investigation quoting multiple sources saying Mr Coulson knew about hacking, which was rife at the News of the World. We now know from John Yates that article was enough to lead the police to reopen their inquiries, and indeed it led to Operation Wheating. We also know now it triggered the termination of the Metropolitan Police's contract with Neil Wallace, Mr Coulson's former deputy at the News of the World. And it led to the offer by Mr Yates to Ed Llewellyn for the Prime Minister to be briefed. Now, the Cabinet Secretary has said it is right that the offer was not taken up. But the question is why? Because it would be seen... Because the Prime Minister was compromised by his relationship with Mr Coulson and therefore could not be told anything at all about an investigation concerning a member of his own staff. He was hamstrung by a conflict of interest. But Mr Speaker, the Prime Minister shouldn't have had to rely on briefings from his Chief of Staff. Here was a major investigation published by a leading global newspaper about the Prime Minister's Director of Communication. Mr Speaker, the Met fired Mr Wallace, even though he wasn't mentioned in the article, because of the associations he had with Mr Coulson and the publication of the article. And what did the Prime Minister do? He did nothing. Mr Speaker, given the New York Times evidence, the public will rightly have expected very loud alarm bells to ring in the Prime Minister's mind, yet apparently he did nothing. And then in October, the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff was approached again by The Guardian about the serious evidence they had about Mr Coulson's behaviour. Once more, nothing was done. Mr Speaker, this can't be put down to gross incompetence. It was a deliberate attempt to hide from the facts about Mr Coulson.
Order. Members shouting out shouldn't be doing so. They must calm themselves, keep on an even keel. It's better for their health and for the House. Mr. Ed Miliband.
The Prime Minister, Mr. Speaker, was caught in a tragic conflict of loyalty between the standards and integrity that people should expect of him and his staff and his personal allegiance to Mr. Coulson. He made the wrong choice. He chose to stick with Mr. Coulson. So, Mr. Speaker, sir, my second question is, can he now explain why he failed to act on clear information and why those around him built a wall of silence between the facts and the Prime Minister? Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister's conflict of interests had real effects. The Metropolitan Police Commissioner resigned on Sunday. The Prime Minister didn't talk about the reasons for his resignation, but the House must talk about it. Sir Paul Stevenson was trapped. He was trapped between a Home Secretary angry at not being told about the hiring of Mr Coulson's deputy, Neil Wallace, and Sir Paul's belief, in his own words, that doing so would have compromised the Prime Minister. Compromised him because of Mr Coulson. And why did Sir Paul think that? Because his own deputy, John Yates, had been told by the Prime Minister's Chief of Staff that the Prime Minister should be told nothing. So, Mr Speaker, this catastrophic error of judgment, hiring Andy Coulson, hanging on for him too long, directly contributed to the position Sir Paul found himself in and his decision to resign. So my third question, Mr Speaker, is does the Prime Minister accept that his conflict of interest put the Metropolitan Police Commissioner in an impossible position? So three questions are about B Sky B, the warnings about Mr Coulson that were consistently ignored, and about the Met Commissioner. These and many other questions will have to be answered by the Prime Minister over the coming months. But there is one other question which matters now. He says that in hindsight he made a mistake by hiring Mr Coulson. He says that if Mr Coulson lied to him, he would apologise. Mr Speaker, that isn't good enough. Yeah. Because people... It's not about hindsight, Mr Speaker. It's not about whether Mr Coulson lied to him. It is about all the information and warnings that the Prime Minister ignored. He was warned, and he preferred to ignore the warnings so that the country can have the leadership we need. Why doesn't he do more? Why doesn't he do more than give a half apology and provide the full apology now for hiring Mr Coulson and bringing him into the heart of Downing Street?
Prime Minister.
What I would say to the Right Honourable Gentleman is stop hunting feeble conspiracy theories and start rising to the level of events. Most of that was just a tissue of totally... I will try and answer every point, but it was... First of all, let me thank him for what he said about recalling Parliament. That is right. Let me thank him for what he said about Lord Leveson. I think he will do a good job. Let me thank him for what he said about the panel, which we sent the names to his office this morning. I have to say, on most of the other questions, I feel he wrote the questions before he heard my statement today. He asks about the issue of B Sky B. The Cabinet Secretary has said there was no breach of the Ministerial Code. You heard the evidence of Rebecca Wade yesterday saying there was not one single inappropriate conversation. And when it comes to setting out meetings with News Corporation, I have set out every single meeting since the last election. No, the Right Honourable Gentleman published a list this morning, but it does not go back to the last election. And indeed, when are we going to see the transparency from Tony Blair and from Gordon Brown? Second issue, his questions about Andy Coulson.
Order. The House is getting overexcited again. I'm glad it's now calmed down and will want to listen to what the Prime Minister has to say.
Second, he asked questions about Andy Coulson. Let me just remind him of this point. No one has raised a single question about his conduct at No. 10 Downing Street. And let's just make this point. There is only today one party leader with a News International executive with a cloud in his head sitting in his office. Third question. The questions he raises about my Chief of Staff, Edward Llewellyn. Is he honestly saying, when it comes to this issue of the proposed meeting with John Yates, is the Leader of the Opposition suggesting that he knows better than the Chairman of the Home Affairs Select Committee, than the Cabinet Secretary, than John Yates, than Paul Stevenson, than all these people, including Jeremy Hayward, who, by the way, worked diligently for Tony Blair and Gordon Brown, is he saying all those people are wrong and he is right? I think that shows a staggering lack of judgment. Let me just answer the question about Sir Paul's resignation. I know it is inconvenient for the Right Honourable Gentleman, but Sir Paul Stevenson set out the reasons for his resignation yesterday in detailed evidence and explained how his situation was so different to the situation in No. 10 Downing Street. Most of the questions he asked I had already answered. The role of the Chief of Staff, answered. The parallels with the Metropolitan Police, answered. The role of Mr Wallace, answered. On closeness to media groups, let's be clear about what we heard yesterday. Rupert Murdoch said, and I quote, "The politician I was closest to was Gordon Brown as Chancellor." And let us just remember, who was the adviser when Gordon Brown was the Chancellor?
Very excitable, will want to hear the answers given by their own Prime Minister. The Prime Minister!
And let us just remember, Mr Speaker, who was the adviser to Gordon Brown when he was the Chancellor? The Right Honourable Gentleman. On the issue of the action we have taken, let us remember during the last Parliament, reports of the Information Commissioner ignored, reports of the Select Committee ignored, the failure of the police investigation ignored. We now know exactly which party was, if you like, the slumber party, and it was the party opposite. Everyone, but frankly, Mr Speaker, everyone can see exactly what he is doing. An attempt to play this for narrow party advantage. The problem has been taking place over many years. The problem is for both our main parties, and the problem is one that the public expect us to stop playing with, but to rise to the occasion and deal with it for the good of the country.
Order. Mr. David Davis.
Mr. Speaker, under the previous Labour government, when my right honourable friend, the member for Ashford, Damien Green, was arrested by the Metropolitan Police, the Prime Minister and Home Secretary of the day were not notified of the details of that investigation. At the time, the Labour front bench insisted it was a matter of ministerial propriety that they were not told. Is it not, therefore, the case that not only has Mr. Ed Llewellyn not done wrong, he's done exactly what a public servant should do, and to say otherwise is hypocrisy?
My right honourable friend makes a very good point. I think when you read the exchange of emails and you see what Edward Llewellyn said, you see that it was cleared in advance by Jeremy Hayward. It was absolutely right. We don't live in a country, thank God, where the Prime Minister starts ordering who should be arrested and who shouldn't be.
Mr. Alan Johnson.
The Home Secretary made a statement on Monday of over 1,000 words, but the two words Neil and Wallace weren't mentioned. She, like me, was unaware of his appointment. But we weren't in a situation where Neil Wallace's best buddy was working for us. The Prime Minister was. Did he know that Neil Wallace was giving advice to the Metropolitan Police?
No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that, and as I've said, in relation to the work he did for Andy Coulson, I was unaware of that. And I think this is an important point, because one of the issues is, frankly, the transparency and information that there was about Neil Wallace and the Metropolitan Police. The one thing everyone has to say about No. 10 Downing Street, there was no hiding the fact that we had employed Andy Coulson.
Mr. Simon Hughes.
Mr. Speaker, I join the Prime Minister in paying tribute to Sir Paul Stevenson and thank him for the announcements that he has made. But will he now explicitly say that he accepts that all governments, from this one back for over 20 years, have been far too close to the media giant in this country, that has to end, which means no more backdoor visits to No. 10, and that we should be able to have not just sight of party political papers, but if necessary, cabinet papers, and the recommendations of the Information Commissioner and others should be implemented to increase criminal penalties for illegality immediately?
Well, first of all, I accept the point he makes about transparency, and what I've set out is not just meetings, if you like, that are business meetings, official meetings with media executives and proprietors, but also private meetings as well. And in relation to the meeting I held with Rupert Murdoch, the fact is not whether he came in through the back door or the front door, but was it declared in the proper way? And yes, it was. In the old days, the only way you found out whether someone had met Rupert Murdoch was waiting for Alastair Campbell's diaries. So in our case, we have been very transparent about this. It goes all the way back to the election. It includes both private and official meetings. It includes meetings whether they were at Chequers or No. 10 Downing Street. And I think we need to go further in this regard. And I think this should be the new standard. And I say to the right honourable gentleman, who's published the information up to when he became leader of the Labour Party, why can't we see right back to the general election?
Mr. Jack Straw.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. When the Prime Minister read of the extensive investigation in the New York Times, Times on the 1st of September of last year, what was his reaction to that and what did he do?
The question I ask myself all the way through is there new information that Andy Coulson knew about hacking at the News of the World? I couldn't be clearer about this. If it turns out that he knew about that hacking, he will have lied to a select committee, he will have lied to the police, he will have lied to a court of law, and he will have lied to me. Now, I made the decision to employ him in good faith because of the assurances he gave me. There was no information in that article that would lead me to change my mind about those assurances. But if it turns out, as I said, I couldn't be clearer, if it turns out that he knew about the hacking, then that will be a matter of huge regret, a matter of great apology, a disgrace not only that he worked in government, but also, vitally, something that would be subject to criminal prosecutions.
Mr. John Whittingdale.
does my right-hand friend agree that what people really care about is the appalling revelations of what has been going on in the newsroom of the News of the World and in parts of the Metropolitan Police, and that the public anger about that is expressly felt by thousands of hard-working and honest journalists and thousands of dedicated and courageous police officers? Yes. And for that reason, it is essential that the police investigation should be completed as quickly as possible, the IPC's investigation should be completed, and the judicial inquiry should get underway and completed as quickly as possible. And can he give an absolute assurance that those will now be given the priority that they should have been given a long time ago?
My old friend is entirely right. At the absolute heart of this, we have got to keep the victims of the hacking scandal. And those are people who've suffered appallingly already and were made to suffer all over again. And the key thing is here is the extent and scale of the judicial inquiry. An inquiry like this into the media, into malpractice, into the police, and yes, into politicians too, has not been held for many, many years. It's been talked about and debated. It's now going to be underway, and I wanted to get on with its work as rapidly as possible.
Yeah. Tom Watson.
Mr. Speaker, I must challenge the Prime Minister on the accuracy of one of his assertions. He said that nobody raised Andy Coulson's conduct with him whilst he worked for the Prime Minister. I did, in a letter on the 4th of October last year, after new allegations that he'd listened to tapes of intercepted voicemail messages came through, and I said in the letter that this cast doubt on the accuracy of Mr. Coulson's statement. I'm still waiting for a reply.
The point, I thank, and let me pay tribute to the Honourable Gentleman what he has done in his role in this. But the point I'm making is simply this, that the time that Andy Coulson spent at number 10 Downing Street, the work he did for the government, no one has made a complaint against. And that does seem to me to be important, because what I've said is I gave him a second chance after he had resigned from the News of the World because of what happened under his watch. And no one has raised with me any of his conduct at number 10 while he carried out that job.
Mr. Charlie Elphick.
Thank you, Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Prime Minister has said that contacts with the media will be published since the general election. I have to say, I don't think that's good enough. What we need to know is the contacts that the government has had for the last 10 years with the media. We need an investigation into Home Office and what Home Office ministers were doing.
Well, the point I make to the Honourable Gentleman is this inquiry is specifically looking at the relationship between politicians and the media, and indeed, at the request of Hacktoff and the Dowler family, the conduct of both. Now, that inquiry can go as far back as it wants to go back to examine the relationship between politicians and the media. But frankly, I think we all need to be clear, particularly the two main parties, that the level of contact has been very great, that we did spend too much time, frankly, trying to, you know, get on with media companies to get our message across. And as a result, we put on the back burner too often, the last government, the last opposition, we put on the back burner too often the issues of how to regulate the media. That's the mistake that we made. We've both all got to be honest about it. And it's not just, by the way, the relationship with News International. It's also about the work we do trying to win over the BBC or The Independent or The Guardian. Let's be frank about this. Let's be transparent about the meetings we had, and then we can learn the lessons and use this as a cathartic moment to sort out the relationship and put it on a better footing.
Mr. Keith Baz.
I'm not sure if the Prime Minister was awake at 5 o'clock this morning, but I'm glad to hear it. But the Home Affairs Select Committee published a unanimous report which pointed out to the fact that we believe there were serious misjudgments in the police investigation, as well as that News International had deliberately thwarted the police investigation. He wouldn't have had a chance to read the evidence of Lord MacDonald of River Gladden, who said he took 5 minutes to look at a file to realise there was criminality. The file was with Harbottle and Lewis for 4 years. Would he send a message out from the dispatch box that anyone who has information about this matter should hand it over immediately to Sue Akers and explain why it's been withheld.
Well, I would certainly send out that message from this dispatch box, at the same time as thanking the Right Honourable Gentleman for the work that his committee has done. I haven't been able to study all of the evidence yesterday. I did look at the key conclusions of his report this morning, and I think the work that his committee is doing, that is drilling down into the conduct of News International and indeed of the police, is extremely valuable. But now what we've got to let happen is the police investigation, now properly resourced, to get underway, to get to the truth, and to make sure there are prosecutions as appropriate, and then to let the inquiry get underway to do its work as well. But I think the Right Honourable Gentleman has played a very good role in helping to make that happen.
Andrea Leadsom.
Does the Prime Minister share my concern that at a time when this House is involved in a very important discussion about this awful issue of phone hacking, and at a time when most people in the country are most concerned about what's going on in the Eurozone area and the impact that that might have on their jobs and their employment in this country, that the Leader of the Opposition is so narrowly focused?
The point I would make, I think, to all honourable members is the public want us to sort this out. And one of the reasons they want us to sort it out and they want us to do it on a cross-party basis is they want us to get on to the other issues that they care so deeply about. And everyone's got to recognise the threat and the problems that we face as there are difficulties in the Eurozone, difficulties that will affect us right here in the UK. But I fully understand and recognise we've got to deal with this before we can get on to those issues.
Mr. Ben Bradshaw,
In his conversations with the Murdochs, with Mrs. Brooks and other News Corp people, was there ever any mention of the B-Sky B bid?
As Rebecca Brooks said yesterday in Parliament, there was never a conversation that could have been held in front of the Select Committee. He asked me to answer the question. Perhaps he will now be transparent, as he was Culture Secretary, about all of the contacts he has had with News International over many years. I have set out the clearest possible position. It is for others now to do the same thing.
Jo Swinson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In light of Ms. Brooks' revelations about quite how cosy and close the relationship was between News International and Tony Blair, and Murdoch's secret backdoor meetings at Number 10 under both the last and present governments, does the Prime Minister agree that this explains why successive governments have been so reluctant to act in response to the 2003 Culture, Media and Sport Committee recommendations, the 2006 Information Commissioner report, and calls last year from Lib Dem MPs for a judicial inquiry into phone hacking?
People shouldn't shout the Honourable Lady down, because she's making a very fair point. And frankly, it's a point that doesn't reflect very well on either Conservative or Labour, which is there were a lot of warnings about what was going wrong. Warnings from the Information Commissioner, warnings from the Select Committee, but we didn't put high enough up the agenda the issue of regulating the media. Now, we shouldn't be pointing fingers about this. We should be recognising that we need to work on this to get it right, to respond to those reports and actually put some of their proposals into the law.
Chris Bryant.
My right honourable friend, the member who chairs the Home Affairs Committee, referred earlier to the file that was compiled in 2007, which was sent off to the legal firm Harbottle and Lewis. Now, in that, according to Lord MacDonald, the former DPP, there is absolutely blindingly obvious evidence that police officers were paid for information by the newspaper. News International are still refusing to allow that to be fully considered and are insisting on client confidentiality. So Harbottle and Lewis, who are an important British firm, are unable to put their side of the argument. Isn't this clear evidence that News International, contrary to the pretend humility yesterday, are still refusing to cooperate fully with the investigation?
Well, the point I would make is that information, if it is germane to the police inquiry, needs to be given to the police and indeed to the Leveson inquiry. What we need to happen now is for the police, and then after the police, this inquiry, to go absolutely in pursuit of the truth. And if people have been paying police officers, those police officers need to be prosecuted, and the people who did the paying need to be prosecuted. It's as simple as that.
James Clapperson.
After hearing the evidence which was given to the Home Affairs Select Committee, can I warmly welcome what my honourable, right honourable friend has said today about the attention which will be given to the victims of phone hacking, which includes a wide variety of people, including many members of the public who'd suffered tragedies in their lives. Is he aware that in the evidence of the Home Affairs Select Committee, it emerges that it will take a considerable rate of time, at the present rate of progress, for all those victims to be properly informed? Will he do whatever he can to ensure that they are informed as quickly as possible and their cases are now properly investigated?
Now, I think my honourable friend makes a good point, and I do understand when you've got the many thousands of people whose phones were hacked and you've got the current rate of progress of contacting them and looking into this, it could take too long a time to get this done. I know there will be conversations with the police and the Metropolitan Police Authority to make sure adequate resources are put into this investigation. It's already a far bigger investigation than the first failed investigation, but to make sure they get to the bottom of this.
Mr. Nigel Dodds.
May I welcome the Prime Minister's decision to widen the terms of reference for the Leveson inquiry to include not just the press, but broadcasters and social media as well? But can I be reassured that it will also include other illegal and unethical activities such as so-called blagging, hacking into email accounts, that it will extend to all parts of the United Kingdom, and that in the interests of the victims of crime and terrorism in particular, that both main parties will be absolutely open about the extent of their relationship with the Murdoch Empire?
On the last point about the relationship with News Corporation and Rupert Murdoch and his family, I've been totally transparent and will go on being transparent. On the issue of what the terms of reference mention, of course this inquiry can look at blagging, can look at all of the information crimes that have been documented. One of the issues in the terms of reference was if you mention some forms but not others, you give an additional priority. But no one should be in any doubt. Lord Justice Leveson can go where the evidence leads.
Louise Mensch.
My right honourable friend agreed that after the extraordinary events of the last few days, the last thing the general public want to see is cheap partisanship.
Want to hear the Honourable Lady, Louise Mensch.
And that a focus on Andy Coulson comes ill from the party of Tom Baldwin and Damien McBride.
Yeah. I think the Honourable Lady makes a good point, and can I commend her for questioning and what she did yesterday on the Select Committee, where I think she showed commendable pluck, if I can put it that way, and as well as asking some extremely pertinent questions.
Mr. Dennis Skinner.
In the course of the past few minutes, the Prime Minister has been asked a simple question twice and refused to answer it. As Prime Minister, did he ever discuss the question of the Bee Sky bid with News Internationals at all the meetings that they attended?
I never had one inappropriate conversation. And let me be clear. I completely took myself out of any decision-making about this bid. I had no role in it. I had no role in when the announcements were going to be made. That is the point. And when the Honourable Gentleman makes signals like that, I have to say...
Order. The House again needs to calm down. Order. The question was properly heard. The Prime Minister's answer must be properly heard. The Prime Minister.
I've answered the question. And the point I would make is, unlike the party he's been supporting for the last God knows how many years, this party's set out all its contacts, all its meetings, everything it did, in stark contrast to the party opposite.
Mr. Tobias Elwood.
Mr. Speaker, this, judging the mood of the chamber, this might be an unpopular thing to say, but outside the Westminster bubble, I'm getting the impression that the nation has had its fill on its subject. It's actually getting fed up. It wants answers about the police corruption. It wants answers about the hacking. It wants answers about the relationship between the press and the media. But there's an inquiry underway, and that's where the answers will actually come. And I think it's time that this Westminster bubble frenzy is actually placed on hold. There are other pressing matters, Mr. Speaker, that this nation expects us
we
to
focus on. We are grateful to the Honourable Gentleman. Prime Minister.
My Honourable Friend makes a good point, which is we have set up the fullest possible inquiry, an inquiry that was never held under the 13 years of the last government. We've now got to let that inquiry find the answers to all of these questions. It looks at the police, it looks at media, it looks at B Sky B, it looks at the conduct of politicians. It is able to ask all of those questions, and we should allow it to get on with the job.
Paul Farrelly.
Speaker, yesterday, Prime Minister, News International's defence seems to have shifted from one rogue reporter to one, possibly more, rogue lawyers. They still haven't fully revealed who knew what and when and who participated in the cover-up. Rupert Murdoch said yesterday to the Select Committee that that situation was unsatisfactory. Prime Minister, what would you urge News International to do now to resolve that situation?
Simple. Tell the truth to the police and to the inquiry.
Nicola Blackwood.
Mr. Speaker, does the Prime Minister agree with me that having failed the victims in 2006 when the Met and the government ignored the ICO's warnings, and having failed the victims in 2009 when the Met's 8-hour review dismissed evidence in their own possession, we should not fail them now by simply apportioning blame? What we need is real reform of our police, our media and our politics.
I think the Honourable Lady is absolutely right, and the fact is we can go back over these reports and back over the missed warnings. The inquiry will be able to do that too, and we should use that information to use this, frankly, once in a generation chance to try and get media regulation right.
David Winnick.
This motion is about public confidence, at least the debate which is going to take place. Can I ask the Prime Minister this question? Does he really feel that his conduct, first as leader of the opposition, then as Prime Minister, should inspire confidence in bearing in mind the phone-hacking allegations and the way in which he employed the former editor of the News of the World? Doesn't he realise that to many people how he has acted in the last few years has been pretty sordid?
My answer to the Honourable Gentleman is yes, because which government has set up a judicial inquiry? This one. Which government has made sure there's a fully resourced and staffed up police investigation? This one. Which government is being totally transparent about its conduct and contacts with the media and asking others to do the same? That is what this government has done. His government, for 13 years, had all these opportunities and failed to take them.
Mr. Philip Davis.
Speaker, would the Prime Minister agree that in the past, when the House of Commons has been faced with big issues, it's had a tendency for knee-jerk overreactions? And would he agree that actually newspapers are a force for good in this country, and that actually what we want at the end of this process is criminality weeded out of the media, but nothing that impinges on a free press, free speech and holding people in authority to account?
I think my honourable friend is entirely right about this, and we have to make sure, as a House of Commons, as a government, as an opposition, in the debate that we have about this, to show an element of restraint in the regulation of the media, because there is always a danger that the pendulum swings too far the other way and we start to threaten investigative journalism, a strong and independent media, one that can call government to account. And when we consider some of the scandals that have been uncovered in recent years, it's often been the press that have done it and not the regulators. We'll come on to this, I'm sure, in the debate we're going to have later, but it's absolutely vital we maintain that British tradition.
David Lammy.
Rebecca Brooks yesterday described the Prime Minister as a friend and a neighbour. We heard from Jeremy Clarkson about Christmas walks and conversations over sausages.
Order. This is the mother of parliaments where we have free speech. This question will be heard. And that's the end of it. Mr. David Lammy.
Given the Butler review in the last Parliament, does the Prime Minister believe that such informality on his behalf was consistent with what is expected?
Well, what I would say to the Honourable Gentleman is one of the things that came out of the evidence yesterday is that whereas Rebecca Brooks was invited 6 times a year to No. 10 Downing Street under both the former Prime Ministers, she hasn't been invited to No. 10 Downing Street by me. Now, of course, I have set out the great contrast. The great contrast is I have set out all of the contacts and meetings that I've had in complete contrast to the party opposite. And I can say this to the Honourable Gentleman, I've never held a slumber party or seen her in her pyjamas.
Mr. Brian Binley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The confidence of my constituents in Northampton in the political...
Order, order, order. I want to hear, and the House wants to hear, Mr. Brian Binley.
Speaker, I will start again. The confidence of my constituents in Northampton in the political process has been progressively undermined and can be traced to the dismal example of politicians in the mid-1990s laying all before the altar of media barons. How can we change that culture, address the abysmal failure of political oversight and leadership, and ensure that never again will we allow propriety to be sacrificed whilst those responsible are asleep on watch?
Well, I think the short answer to the Honourable Gentleman is I think transparency is probably the best answer. I'll come on to this in my speech when we open the debate, but I think the best way of making sure relationships are appropriate and we don't duck issues of media regulation is for everyone to see how often we meet.
Mr. Nick Rainsford.
The Prime Minister has repeatedly emphasised that he has no evidence of any complaint or questions about the conduct of Andy Coulson while he was heading the Government Media Service. Will the Prime Minister confirm that a year ago, during the period when Mr. Coulson was Director of Communications, the Cabinet Secretary was alerted to evidence of illegal phone hacking, covert surveillance, and hostile media briefing directed against a senior official in the Government Service? What action, if any, was taken to investigate what appears to have been disgraceful and illegal conduct close to the heart of government?
Well, I have to look very closely at what the Honourable Gentleman says, but the point I've made, and I've never seen any evidence to go against it, is that in the period that Andy Coulson worked at No. 10 Downing Street as head of communications, that there was no complaint about the way he did his job. Now, I fully accept, I take responsibility for employing him. I take responsibility for that decision. And I've laid out very clearly today what I think of that now and all that has been learnt, and you have to learn these lessons if you're going to go on and get things right for the future. I would say, in my defence, is the time he spent in Downing Street, he did not behave in a way that anyone felt was inappropriate. And that is important, because the decision was to employ him. The decision was then his to leave. And during that period, people cannot point to misconduct and say that, therefore, was a misjudgment.
Karen Bradley.
Many constituents have contacted me regarding this important issue, and they will join me in welcoming the statement today. But many others have been in touch concerning other important issues, such as the crisis in the Eurozone and the situation in the Horn of Africa. Can the Prime Minister reassure my constituents that this government is dealing with all issues and not simply focusing on phone hacking?
The Honourable Lady is right. People do want us to get on with the other issues, particularly at a time where we need the economy to grow, we need to provide more jobs, we've got to get to grips with problems of the cost of living. They want to see reforms in welfare and immigration. Yes, they want us to deal with this issue, but they want us to keep a perspective and a balance and get on with many of the issues this country needs to deal with.
Mr. Pete Wishart.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister is absolutely right to say that this needs a cross-party, all-party response to get to the bottom of these issues. Will he therefore ensure that all the minority parties, all the parties in this House, are consulted about the ongoing inquiries, not just the Labour opposition? And will he take very seriously the responses from the devolved administrations about the current inquiry and administration?
What I say to the Honourable Gentleman, we did consult the devolved administrations about the terms of reference and about the inquiry. A number of points were made, not all of them were possible to be included because sometimes they clashed with points made by other consultees, including the official opposition. So we tried to get the balance right. But I think anyone looking at the terms of reference will see it covers all of the ground and actually sets out an extremely comprehensive and effective inquiry.
Mr. Robert Halfon.
Mr. Speaker, whilst recognising the disgraceful nature of the phone hacking scandal, will my honourable friend resist the siren calls of those motivated by petty politics, revenge and anti-competition who want to curtail the advantages of a free press and ensure that there is no alternative to the monopoly of the BBC?
Yeah. I think we'll come on to the issue of media regulation and media plurality and also the power of media owners when we discuss this in the debate. And I think it is important not to leave the BBC out of that entirely, because it is such a huge part of the media industry in the UK. What we want to make sure is that no media group becomes too powerful or has too much influence, because that will help with the issue of the relationship between politics and the media as well.
Emily Thornberry.
I thank the Right Honourable Gentleman for telling us that he will answer all questions, and I wonder, therefore, if I could take him back to the article in the New York Times in September 2010. He's told us today that no information in that article could make him change his mind about Mr. Colson. So, therefore, could he tell us who brought it to his attention? Did he read it at the time? And who did he discuss it with that led him to the conclusion that Colson was not involved?
Yeah. This article, like many others, was discussed and debated and written about in the British press as well. And, of course, all the way through this, so let me be clear, because it's an important question, all the way through the employment of Andy Coulson, there were questions about his resignation of the News of the World, what did he know about the hacking inquiry, and all the rest of it. I set myself a very simple test, which is that if anybody brought me credible information that showed he knew about hacking, I would have fired him. That is as simple as that. And if I knew that he'd known about hacking, I wouldn't have hired him in the first place. I've tried to be extremely clear about this. As I say, the decision and the responsibility is mine for hiring him. His conduct at Number 10, no one has been able to reproach. He doesn't work at Number 10 Downing Street anymore, and the only person from News International with a cloud over their head that's stuck in a private office is not in my private office.
Mr. Mike Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Putting aside what's appropriate and what's inappropriate, could the Prime Minister just say whether or not, in the conversations he had, the question of the Sky B takeover was mentioned?
The point I'm trying to make is this. I had no responsibility for the Sky B takeover. I specifically asked to be taken out of any of the decision-making and any of the information, because I didn't want to put myself in any sort of compromising position. I was very clear about that, so much so that I didn't even know when many of the key announcements were being made. That is why Rebecca Brooks was quite able to say at the House of Commons yesterday that there wasn't a single conversation that couldn't have taken place in front of the Select Committee. Now, I know that many people were hoping for some great allegation yesterday that could add to their fevered conspiracy theories. I'm just disappointed for them that they didn't get one.
Yeah. Alan Michael.
Mr. Speaker, as Police Minister, my experience of briefings from the police was that they didn't give you any operational information, but they did tell you things that you needed to know. Senior police officers in the Metropolitan Police would understand that perfectly. That's exactly what they were offering the Prime Minister. Does he really want to be kept in the dark? Why did he not... Was he angry? Sorry. As a minister, I would be livid if officials were keeping information from me.
Yeah.
Did the Prime Minister want to be kept in the dark, or is he angry with his chief of staff?
I set this out in great detail in the statement. Of course, I have very regular meetings with senior leaders in the Metropolitan Police Service and are briefed about particularly terrorist operations for which the Prime Minister and COBRA have a particular responsibility. But the key issue about my Chief of Staff's email is that since reading it, Paul Stevenson, John Yates, the Cabinet Secretary and the head of the Home Affairs Select Committee have all said that was the right judgment. And Yates specifically says the offer was quite rightly rejected.
Mordant.
This House, the media and the whole country have been rightly focused on this issue. But is the Prime Minister aware that aid agencies are reporting that a consequence of that focus has been a lack of public awareness of the humanitarian crisis in Somalia and as a consequence, lower donations to relief funds? Can the Prime Minister assure me and the House that he will spend his time looking at those issues as well as this one?
Prime Minister responds. The matter to which the Honourable Lady has referred is extremely serious, but whatever her strength of feeling about it, this cannot mutate into a general exchange about other matters, and I know the Prime Minister won't want it to do so. The Prime Minister.
Well, I thought it was ingenious to get that point into order, but I think the Honourable Lady is making a very important point, and that was one of the reasons why I didn't want to cancel entirely my visit to Africa. It is important that we actually get on with doing the things that Britain should be doing in the world, whether that is trading with countries like Nigeria and South Africa, or leading the aid effort, as we are, in the Horn of Africa, where today we've been told it is not just a catastrophe and a drought, it is also a famine. And I'm proud of the fact that Britain is not being deflected from the great role that it's playing to try and feed hungry people.
Yeah. Mr. Jim Sheridan.
Mr. Speaker, at yesterday's evidence sessions, Rupert Murdoch was asked about his frequent meetings with the Prime Minister and his government, at which he replied, "I wish they would leave me alone." Will the Prime Minister and his government comply with that request?
One of the outcomes of all of this is there'll be a lot more of leaving everybody alone.
Mr. Nadeem Zahawi.
Speaker, in the Operation Motorman investigation, the Information Commissioner found 861 personal information transactions which were positively identified as coming from 89 Mirror Group newspaper journalists. Can the Prime Minister confirm that the inquiry that he has announced will be able to look into the unlawful practices going on at Mirror Group newspapers?
I think the Honourable Gentleman makes an important point, which is while we shouldn't believe automatically that these practices were spread right across the media, I think it would be naive to think that they were restricted to one newspaper or one newspaper group. And indeed, when you look at evidence like Motorman and the Information Commissioner's report, it's clear that they went wider, and this inquiry and indeed this police investigation must go where the evidence leads. And all of us have got to ask questions about people that we employ and the rest of it if they were involved in these newspapers.
Cathy Jameson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have heard what the Prime Minister has said about consulting with the devolved administrations. For the avoidance of any doubt, can the Prime Minister say whether this inquiry does extend to Scotland, does include the issues such as policing which are devolved in Scotland? Has he secured the agreement of Scotland's First Minister for that? And in that context, has he secured an assurance from an uncharacteristically quiet First Minister about his contacts with News International?
I can confirm this inquiry does extend to Scotland. As I said, we did send the draft terms of reference to the devolved administrations. We were able to accept a number of points. There was, I think, one specific point that the Scottish administration wanted dealt with, which concerned the Information Commissioner's report, which we haven't put specifically into the terms, but of course it will be dealt with by the inquiry because it's such an important part of the work. More generally speaking, when it comes to the relationship between politicians and media, this inquiry will be able to go where the evidence leads.
Lee Scott.
Will a friend agree with me that whilst there are allegations against some officers in the Metropolitan Police, that the vast majority of hundreds of police officers every day are protecting us and doing a wonderful job and should not be smeared by this?
It's an incredibly important point. Police officers put their lives on the line for us every single day. And while, of course, we have to get to the bottom of what went wrong in the Met, we shouldn't allow that to undermine the public confidence that people have in the Bobby on the Beat and the fantastic job they do for us.
Mr. Richard Burden.
In response to the question from my old friend from Islington, the Prime Minister said if he was given credible information regarding Andy Coulson, he would have done something about it. So will he now answer the question from my honourable friend from West Bromwich East? When he received that letter in October, what did he do?
The answer to this is that all of the information that came out while Andy Coulson was working at No. 10 Downing Street, there was a permanent conversation, if you like, about was this new evidence that he knew about phone hacking. If it was, he would have to go. If it wasn't, he wouldn't. That is the key point. But in the end, let me just answer it this way. In the end, because there were so many allegations and because he wasn't able to get on with his job, he left. The second chance I gave him didn't work. Now, we can go over this a million times, but in the end, the decision to appoint him is mine, for which I've taken full responsibility. The conduct that he had at the No. 10 Downing Street is not something that's under question. So I think it'd be better if we spent our time working out how we're going to clear up the illegality that took place.
Anna Soubry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, there must be widespread across this House agreement that it's imperative that the police and the media start now to clear up their own mess. And to that end, would the Prime Minister agree with me that it's time that police officers stop divulging the details of arrested people before they're charged, and the press stop then printing those details and invariably engaging in a feeding frenzy that destroys somebody's reputation, even though they haven't even been arrested.
Well, I know the Honourable Lady has experience of this from before she came into politics, her work as a lawyer and also in broadcasting. One of the things that my right hon. Friend, the Home Secretary, has announced is the fact that Elizabeth Filkin is going to work for the Metropolitan Police to try and work out a better code of ethics, including in relation to the media and the steps that they take. And I think this has opened up a whole conversation that perhaps in this country we put off for far too long.